Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 213, episode 1 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Monday, November 29th, 2021. I didn't even look up what international day it is. I think, is that Cyber Monday? Do we call that Cyber Monday? The Monday after
Black Friday? Yeah, Cyber Monday, that's what it is.
It always sneaks up on me, you know.
Out there lurking.
A lot of people complain about how Cyber Monday celebrations start earlier and earlier every year, but this year really snuck up on me, guys. But that's all we need to care about. It doesn't matter. You don't need to recognize anything other than Cyber Monday, Jeff Bezos's created holiday. Anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Mustache. Grow a mustache. Your phone can't ID your face at all. Look like an unemployed cop. It'll dominate all your Zoom calls. Chase Julia Roberts down the street. Make parents pull their kids near to their seat. When you've got a mustache, it's a Ted Lasso Borat joke. An eye contact broke. Your wife won't like you time. That is courtesy of the past couple weeks of my life. Living with a mustache.
No.
Yeah.
How bad is your life really, though?
Very. Legitimately, I can sense that she likes me less. And then I point it out, and she's like, yeah, I do. That's accurate, man.
What about your
look
children?
Like a creep. They're kind of over it. They think, yeah, okay, they still like me. Because they don't have enough cultural experience to recognize what this mustache means and what it signifies about somebody. I should actually be concerned that they're not more alarmed by my mustache.
Right, they gotta get to know. Yeah. Like, you want to watch out for this in the real world, kids.
Yeah.
Okay,
not I should all have like changed my personality when I grew it, just to like. So they're like, this is not a good thing. Anyways, I'm thrilled to be joined by a special guest co-host whose voice you've already heard. She's a producer here at the iHeartRadio LA Podcast Studio. helping to create shows like, I don't know, Fake Doctors, Real Friends, and Scientology Fair Game with Leah Remini. She's a fabulous writer who you can read at Vulture, The AV Club, Teen Vogue, Pace, The Advocate, all the ones. A talented on-mic podcaster's voice you can hear on Fake Doctors and Pop Culture Happy Hour, all that shit. She is the brilliant and talented Joelle Monique,
aka the Marvel Defender, aka your sister's best friend. I will beat you up. That was such a lovely introduction. I'm happy you do my resume for me, so I don't have to do it.
Wait, so why would you beat somebody up? You like the two?
Just your sister's best friend should be able to beat you and any other man that comes anywhere near her up. Like, just at all times, just be prepared to beat up a man. Okay. You know, hopefully you never have to use your powers, but should the need arise, I'm prepared.
Well, Joelle, not only am I so fortunate and blessed to be joined by you as a guest co-host, we are thrilled to be joined by one of the very faces on Mount Zeitmore. He co-hosts the podcast, The Worst Idea of All Time. He's just one of the funniest stand-up comics doing it. One of your favorites, one of our favorites, the hilarious and talented Guy Montgomery!
Oh my word. Thank you so much, Jack and Joelle, as always. An honor to be here. Very difficult to sit through a minute-long diatribe against mustaches. When I don't rock just a seasonal mustache. I've spent a lot of my adult life wearing a mustache. I didn't realize that I was in some sort of subset of society.
It's it's all about the, like, the particulars on the mustache, right? Mm. Like, you look great with a mustache. Yeah. It works with your complexion. My mustache is very dark and it's rude. It's obtrusive and rude.
I first grew this because I couldn't grow a mustache for a long time, and I grew this when I started doing stand-up comedy because I thought people look funnier with a mustache.
It's true.
Yeah. And then this year, I had it for several years, and this year as a gift to my mom, who I was with for New Year's Eve, I shaved off my mustache and I said, "Mom, I'm not going to have a mustache all year because mums hate mustaches."
What? Yeah. I'm learning so much today. Why does your mom? I understand why ladies are very particular about their guys' like facial hair. Okay. They have to kiss it. It's a lot. But why is your mom like no on the mustache?
My mom and I are big on open mouth kissing. And so she hates the way it feels. No, it's because I think she wants me to still be her little boy. And the mustache represents the grown-ass man that I am.
It destroys the illusion for her. I get it. I was just thinking, maybe perhaps kids aren't afraid of the mustache now because, like, for us as children, it, like, represented, like, perverts. We were like, mustaches are weird, creepy guys in the backs of the Blockbusters. Don't go back there. It's weird. I think kids now associated with Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man, and they're like, that guy's cool as hell. He's a billionaire and a playboy and a philanthropist. Like, he's got everything. He's totally ready. Robert Downey Jr. has single-handedly changed the face of mustaches for children.
But he's got a goatee, doesn't he? He's not just straight up mustachioed.
It's the exact same combo as you have in Sherlock Holmes. It's just mustache, little soul patch underneath. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm also interested, Jack, because I think a mustache is okay, but I think that little goatee you've got beneath your bottom lip is
the problem.
Is borderline inexcusable. do you not think that perhaps if you lost that part of your facial hair that your wife might forgive some of your decisions through November?
I don't think so. I don't think so, but I also, it means enough to me to, I only get to wear a mustache once in my life, I think. Mm-hmm. So I've always wanted to look like Val Kilmer in Tombstone. Instead, I don't look like that, but, it was a valiant effort. So
I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I think it's very becoming on you. And I've also got to ask, did you self-write that, that intro, that jaunty intro tune?
I did. Yeah. I did this morning.
Good on you, man.
Hey, it means
a
lot.
It's a great one.
I've had a lot of material because literally every Zoom call, every work call, every conversation that I have with somebody starts with 15 minutes of them talking about how I look like Julia Roberts's dangerous ex-husband and sleeping with the enemy.
Oh, no.
How, yeah. So it's planned. And also just a month of not being able to open my phone with my face.
I think you look like a hot little piece of ass. So why don't you put that in your next song?
That's kind. I appreciate that. All right, Guy. Well, as you know, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. But first, we're going to tell our listeners just a couple of things we're talking about. We're going to have special guest Robert Evans join. I've been wanting to hear his thoughts on the Rittenhouse verdict and just where we're at with regards to the possibility of a second American Civil War, and, you know, just fun stuff like that. And also, I'm just like, I feel like for whatever reason, even before Rittenhouse went and met with Trump at Mar-a-Lago at the end of last week, I was like, this somehow helps Trump, I feel like. And now, I don't know. I feel like he's going to get reelected. I've felt that way for a while. So I'm very worried about that.
Guy, is there more space over there where you are? I hear it's lovely.
Right.
Oh, yeah. We got, I think per cabin, we got too much space.
Yeah.
Barely,
awesome.
You can barely move for free space.
Also true of America. America has like one of the lowest population densities of any country, but they pretend like, we're running out.
We're full. There's no more space here.
I drove through the middle once and there was nothing but space.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
Yeah. But it's also, I feel like the middle's where people lose their minds because they're too far away from the sea. I think if you get too far away from the sea for too long, you kind of lose perspective.
Mm. See, for me, it was not being able to order 4 a.m. Thai. That's really why I had to leave the middle space. You need to be able to get Thai food any time of the night, or what is the point of living?
Yeah.
It's not there.
Fair enough. We're going to talk about fentanyl fear-mongering going on. It has expanded to weed. The U.S. police are letting people know you gotta be careful because the drug dealers are spraying the weed with fentanyl. And as far as we can tell, that's not true. So we're going to talk about that. We are going to revisit McDonald's ice cream machine because that saga has continued to unfold and continued to be a better and better metaphor for just how American capitalism actually works.
All the important stories at Daily Zeitgeist today.
Yes. Well, actually, Joelle, it is a metaphor for the military-industrial complex, I will have you know.
I can't wait to oscillate between, you know, really lighthearted and silly stuff, but then also quite grave and serious stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like I've the McDonald's range. Ice cream machine.
Yeah.
We're going to get to some of that stuff, maybe more. But before we get to any of it, Guy, we do like to ask our guests, what's something from your search history?
So I recently was researching the, I think her name is Paula Cole. You know, she had that song, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?
Yeah.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to be funny in conversation with my girlfriend, so I Googled, where have all the cowboys actually gone? You know, wanting to know where these cowboys have gone. And through that, I found this incredible, like near the top of the Google hit on that, I found this incredible like 10-year-old Reddit post where the title is, where have all the cowboys gone? Feminism killed them.
Oh, no.
It's this like ancient screed written by some disgruntled internet user. I didn't actually find out where the true cowboys have gone. Perhaps, like you, Joelle, they've moved somewhere where they have access to Thai food around the clock.
No, they're still out there. Oklahoma, teaching kids how to ride bulls by first having them ride sheep. They're working hard, keeping the lifestyle alive.
The Twitter account that posted it is called Pro-Woman Anti-Feminist, and it's just like a disaster of sort of attempted pseudo-intellectual, you know, scribblings, where it says... Paula Cole captures the cognitive dissonance when a woman's primal nature clashes with a modern woman's feminist indoctrination. It's like a comedy essay.
I'm assuming she did not intend to, make a men's rights activist.
I think the issue with creating art is once you put it out in the world, it's not really yours anymore. And you don't get to choose who likes it or how they interact with it.
Mm.
And, you know, she just wrote a jaunty tune.
Yes.
A sad tune. It starts as a love story and it ends, they don't end up so happy together.
I know.
He leaves.
What a shame.
The nerve of this guy to leave.
Fucking Cowboys, man. They always do. They'll always break your heart. that's why I always tell mamas not to raise their sons to grow up to be them. I've said that from day one. All right, Guy, what is something you think is overrated?
Overrated? I've been opening some of these recently, and I guess, what do? You read them? Do you look at them? Pop-up books.
Pop-up Whoa. Books.
You know the those best. Books? The books where the stuff yeah. pops up out of the middle?
Yeah.
Nah,
overrated.
Man.
Overrated.
Overrated.
Where
what
is
are
your
you?
Sense of childhood joy gone, Guy? We just turn the page and, oh, it's three-dimensional art just flung into my eyes.
I feel like they're authors who are trying to make movies, but they're not quite there yet. Pick a team.
Yeah.
What are you, you know?
They are very enjoyable to children, but I think for the reason that they are the closest books come to being toys. And so yeah. that, yeah.
I okay, see.
So listen, no. What imagination and joy in between two hard covers. Very pro book over here when the art is actually lifted off the page. And sometimes they have like little pull tabs, you know, where there's other things behind the thing. Guys,
hey, I didn't say a single bad thing about those pull tabs.
Right.
The pull tabs are incredible. But, you know, if you want to make a movie, make a movie.
Yeah.
Of course, Stacey's pop-up book. So violent. So clues behind every tab. I love it.
They're also getting better. That is one thing that I have noticed has been improved upon since I was a youngster, when a pop-up book consisted of like a cutout of whatever would have been drawn there. And just like you open it and it like kind of moves forward slightly. Like they have gotten pretty elaborate with the sort of kinetic origami is what I'll call it, guys.
Absolutely,
yeah. It's poetry in motion.
The pop up book industrial complex will not go down without a fight. You know, they're using higher grade cardboard. They have more resilient pop outs now because they've seen what children are doing to these pop outs, and they've said, "How can we counter that?"
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's admirable,
yeah, really watch out for big pop-up.
Yeah, yeah, I'm against them.
What is something you think is underrated?
Well, I'm in Auckland, New Zealand, and we are actually, we've just celebrated our 100th day of our lockdown. So it's obviously a huge accomplishment in and of itself, but it does come with missing, you're both making quite, you're sort of scrunching up your faces at me.
You did 100 not, days.
Yeah.
3 months. Do you guys know when you're getting out? This feels like if I were in prison for life and someone's like, man, I got 5 months in here, but we made it through the first three. We're good. I'd be like, fuck you.
We're almost out. And it's, you know, it's been a long time, but it's done its job. But I miss socializing. You'll be shocked to hear.
Do you?
And one of the things I'm looking forward to, which I think is underrated, is getting into a car with four adult friends, getting like five grown-ups in a car, because technically a car is designed to accommodate five grown-ups, but as soon as you do it, you know they never thought it would actually happen.
Instantly regrettable every time.
Yeah.
And there's just, there's something I like about that.
There's a camaraderie.
Yeah. And like, yeah, you know, being in the middle and the back, and you think there's not enough space back here.
Right.
I just want to feel the experience of socializing, I guess, is what I'm saying, maybe. Maybe I think socializing is underrated.
But mainly it's the just being like crushed into a moving vehicle.
I feel like, and this might, you know, we're rounding into summer here and I'm getting excited and I'm getting ahead of myself. Oh, yeah. But there's something about like if I get into a car with four other adults, it's usually because we're going somewhere exciting. Mm. Or a little bit, you know, it's a little bit hard to get to or a little bit far away. And I want that feeling.
Listen, I respect it. I went bowling for the first time like in 15 years, 2 weeks ago. But it was also the first time I saw more than like two friends in their house who were trying to socially distance and be respectful and not kill each other. And it was wonderful. We got drinks. There was pizza involved. It was pretty close to heaven after being trapped in my house. I had a work meeting in person the other day, guys. It's mind-blowing. Wow. I was like, are we in an office talking to each other, drawing on walls? who knew life was this glorious? I really feel like the pandemic has given me a new lease on life, in that, like, I just really want to appreciate every day I don't have to be inside of my house.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. That was great. Just like, Joel, you weren't here for this, but Guy was just lording it over us for all this time.
Oh, wow.
But we were in America as the United States was crumbling around us and we weren't allowed out of the house. Guy was like, yeah, I just went to a sporting event and it was wonderful and freeing. How's it going over there, though? Even though we had just talked for 15 minutes about how it's going over here.
Guy, disappointing.
That's okay. You know, I'm a centurion now. So I've experienced some of those liberties, and now I also have the sense of participation and accomplishment that comes with being in your house for a very long time.
Yeah.
You basically spent summer break grounded. And while I respect the hard time you have done, we're quickly approaching year three. Long in this damn house.
I know. This is what I say. I say, am I the only the novel coronavirus? Am I the only one of us who thinks the novelty has well and truly worn off?
I mean, that's good material right there. I think I have a booster coming up. So that's exciting.
Oh, you gotta get those boosters.
Right? Mm-hmm. Am I right? All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to see if we can't track down Robert Evans, and we will be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melanin Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
And we're back, and Robert has just joined the conversation.
Whoa! I am seeing Jack's mustache for the first time here.
Hey!
Welcome to the conversation, Robert! Yeah!
Well, this is exciting. I didn't expect this. Is Christmas came early this year.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Since the Rittenhouse verdict came in, and I saw a cryptic tweet from you saying, be careful what you post on social media today. I've been wanting to just kind of overall get your thoughts on what where this puts us.
Because
it does seem, you know, you've been in the shit. You were on the streets in Portland during a lot of the violence that happened there during the, you know.
Oh yeah, protests. Had a lot of guys pointing guns at me in the wake of the Rittenhouse, the initial shooting. Because when that happened, every right winger in the Northwest decided it's time to show up in a crowded city at a protest with a big old gun and see if I might get a chance to shoot somebody. It was a fun couple of weeks.
So, with all that being said, what are your thoughts on where we are, and in the context of violence and, you know?
Well, Jack, I think it's the dawning of an era of good feelings. I think things are fine. People seem to like each other more than ever. I feel like we're all getting on the same page about some important issues. We really have built back better in summation.
Great. Well, it's been great having you, Robert. Yeah, thank you for joining us. I just wanted to make sure.
As someone who's not in America, I'd like to co-sign that. That's certainly the perspective we're getting from down here in New Zealand.
Just a functional ass country right here.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this is a pretty dangerous time, Jack. I spend about 80% of my time doing podcasts and about 20% of it actually doing journalism. And most of my journalism focuses on the far right. And folks who followed it will know that in 2019, I was writing and doing media appearances constantly about 8chan and the Christchurch shooting and the shootings that followed in the wake of that were all spawned from that website. And so the community that I was following at the time, the rhetoric that I saw in that community, which was mostly groups of a few hundred, sometimes a few thousand, like neo-Nazis spreading propaganda, that kind of propaganda that I had to go to places like 8chan or other weird little corners of the internet to find, Tucker Carlson's saying it, right? The Christchurch Mass Shooters Manifesto was the great replacement. Carlson did a whole 2-episode series on how white people are being replaced, although he didn't quite use those, but that was the gist of it, that Democrats are bringing in non-white people to replace the original members of the
voters
country. So
yeah, it was a demographic voting argument. Yeah, he was just couching it in I'm just a political analyst here,
yeah,
type of thing, but it was straight up
Nazi propaganda. Yeah. So that's larger, and one of the consequences of J6 is, you know, when social media apps threw a lot of people off of their services, and just, you know, other people left because they'd seen their favorite right-wing thought leader get banned for suggesting the people be murdered. They all wound up in places like Telegram, which is, in the United States, primarily is used by Nazis.
So you're seeing the more mainstreaming of these, kind of violently extremist perspectives. Did you follow the Rittenhouse, trial? What were your thoughts on, were you surprised by how it played out?
Well, no. I think one of the silliest things has been kind of the Glenn Greenwald Substack contingent trying to press stories that the media got the Rittenhouse. If you're surprised about the Rittenhouse verdict, it's because you're in a media bubble. Nobody's surprised. We're he's a white kid with millions of dollars to spend on his legal defense.
Right.
He's probably going to get off. It's a small town jury, you know. I think he'll be fine. And he was fine.
The judge, really. The only thing that I was surprised by was how openly friendly the judge was.
It's pretty bad.
But okay. So that's we've already covered that. But
Yeah.
So, I guess what's your best guess as to like what the immediate future looks like, and how are you feeling about a second American Civil War, which is something you've been warning was a danger for a number of years, and now people are like, wait a second, Robert wasn't just joking.
I mean, we're definitely experiencing a kind of low intensity insurgency. And you're seeing this on the ground in like school board meetings and kind of some of the early attempts to take over and stop vote counting processes earlier this year. In a lot of these like attacks on school boards, like threats against parents and school board members, you're seeing death threats against election officials. And as of yet, the actual level of deadly violence, there's been a lot of non-deadly. There's constant street fights every week in this country, often at like local government meetings. It's happening constantly. Los Angeles is a hot spot in particular. But more to the point, I think you are seeing an escalation of rhetoric around deadly violence. And the Rittenhouse verdict had a definite impact on that. On like kind of the far right side of things, like the people who are happy wearing swastikas, they're putting him in memes with like where they're sainting him and putting like a little swastika halo around his head, like they do with all the mass shooters, like they do with what's his name? Dylann Roof and the like.
And most of that's not an ironic commentary, like
it's both.
Critique.
Not a critique, but like they're so irony poisoned that you can't ever say anything they say is entirely serious. You know, like
sure.
it's this mix of things, because they'll also like call him cucked or whatever for saying that he supports BLM. Like you have to like these people are capable of holding totally ironic and totally sincere beliefs about the same thing. And so you have to accept that and assume that, like, just because they're joking about shooting people doesn't mean they don't also want to shoot people or have people
sure.
get shot, right?
Right.
Like, it's this, I'm sure if you'd looked at a lot of stuff Brenton Tarrant had posted online before he killed 50 people, you would have been like, well, this is just like a guy shit talking. But anyway, what worries me is that the shit talking about killing other people has spread. I'm seeing the channels I'm seeing where people are talking about showing up with guns at protests and killing people, or just plain killing liberals and leftists, the channels where people are discussing that are 10 to 50 times larger than they were this time a year ago. Channels that I would see like 3,000 or 4,000 people talking about murdering the left, stacking bodies like cordwood. Now there's like 55,000 people following. And like, it's that concerns me. The amount of, I'm sure the signal to noise ratio has also gotten worse. Like, I'm sure there's a lot more people talking about killing their political enemies, and a lot higher percentage of the people who talk about that are full of shit. But also
right.
the rhetoric itself makes it more likely, because there's always X number of people out there who are at such a point in their life or are the kind of person who if they see that, it's kind of like how if you've got like a family member who's a little bit racist, but they never talked about it openly until like Facebook, and then they see some article that says the racist thing that they've always thought, and they share it on Facebook, who's like, well, someone else said it, so now
right.
I can share it, right? Now like it's safe for me to express this racist thing I've always believed. Like that same thing exists for wanting to murder people. And some percentage of the people who get exposed to that rhetoric will actually go out and commit murder. And every time that happens, it ratchets up the temperature. It increases the odds that someone on the left will kill someone on the right, which obviously, as we saw last year, when Jay Danielson, the Trump supporter, was shot dead in Portland, like things went bug fuck for a while.
Right.
They had to send in the U.S. Marshals to murder that guy to try. And like, it was this, it's just this.
Right, the guy who shot the Trump supporter.
Yeah, it's this self-escalating cycle, and we keep spinning up and spinning up and spinning up. And at the same time as, like, I think Rittenhouse raises the temperature. I think this verdict raises the temperature. I'm not sure that a guilty verdict would have lowered it, though. Like, I don't know
right.
if giving them a martyr is worse for overall levels of violence. Like, I think once he started pulling his trigger in Kenosha that night, both...
Yeah.
Like potential outcomes of the court case had equal potentials to incite violence. I honestly think that. Like, not, that's not me saying I don't think a conviction would have been justified. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that it would have made a difference from like a inspiring additional acts of violence standpoint.
But that's a super dangerous place to be, because the people who are talking about committing these violent acts and, you know, on the teetering on the edge of doing that, they see that risk reward. You know, they see the same thing you're seeing. They see that their two outcomes are likely either they get away with it or they become a martyr and, you know, become a national hero. So like that, yeah, it just seems like the incentive system is really not there to prevent more of this shit happening.
It is. And one of the things that worries me that I think there's a good chance we'll see at some point, if Rittenhouse had gotten convicted, he could not have been pardoned because they were not federal charges. But I suspect that as we gear up for 2024, Republican presidential candidates are going to be falling over themselves to pardon J6, like convictees, like people who were in prison for their actions on January 6th. And I suspect the next time there's a murder like this, if there's a conviction or even the threat of a conviction on federal charges, it's going to be there's going to be a campaign on the right to pardon people for committing acts of violence like that. And that I think that's kind of the next stage when you actually get a right-wing government in power again and they turn the kind of legal apparatus that exists into providing the legal justifications and niceties for a campaign of political extermination. That's something that worries me a lot. I almost regret the framing of civil war. I think it's useful, and that's the reason I did it, in terms of getting people to understand the potential consequences, the real actual potential body count of the kind of conflict we're going to see. It's less about a kind of like armed insurgency in the hills necessarily than it is about, or at least I think that's less likely almost than a situation in which you have two sides shooting the shit out of each other and one of those sides has the backing of the government to commit atrocities, you know, like that you get something like that, or you get a bunch of different conflicts like that and different police departments and federal agencies like backing different groups, which you've had versions of since forever. You know, you look at what's just come out about the assassination of Malcolm X, right, who was killed by FBI informants. And, you know, who the fuck knows what the actual situation is there. But you've always had law enforcement groups like who have been willing to use kind of paramilitary methods within the United States to destroy political opponents. I think that's kind of what I'm worried about as the next stage of this. And obviously that can escalate. Like I think it's a long road to the kind of violence we see in Afghanistan, but it's also like the route on the road to that point is bloody enough as it is. Even if you never quite get there, there's a lot of blood in between here and Kabul, you know?
I feel like the mainstream assumption, and then I'm going to let Joel and Guy say anything, sorry to dominate, but like I feel like the centrist sort of mainstream assumption is that the right is always going to be the outside like insurgency, kind of in that insurgency position. And there's just such a long history of violent right-wing killing of people on the left that is, you know, condoned and or sponsored by
the Greensboro massacre government back in, I think it was the 70s. Yeah.
Right. Also, just to your point about the groups of people like online saying that they want to stack the bodies of people on the left growing exponentially. Are you seeing the same growth of people on the left? Like it feels like the left hasn't really grown with it because they're in sort of a weird political situation where like the person in office is supposed to be somebody that is on their side, and when they point out no, he's actually not doing shit, it's like, God, you guys just can't consolidate around a single message. So I just feel like the left is staying the same size while the right and right-wing violence is like having this upsurge.
I will say I have seen a significant rise, equal to the rise on the right, in extremist left-wing rhetoric, but that doesn't all extremism is not created equal. It is extreme to say, I think we should end capitalism, overthrow the police entirely, redistribute all of the money of the billionaires, and destroy the oil and gas industry, and institute a radical regime of ecological repair. That's an extreme political attitude, right? I have seen that increase. I've seen a variety of, including like, you know, stuff that like state communism and all sorts of, a whole bunch of different radical left-wing ideologies have gotten more popular. Including some that are like that approve of murdering people, right? I think overall the amount of I've seen increased rhetoric talking about killing people on the left is a fraction of what I've seen on the right, because left-wing extremist ideology is less likely to talk about killing people, right? There are radical left-wing strains of ideology that want to stack bodies, you know? But as a percentage of radical left-wing thought, it's lower than the percentage of radical right-wing thought that wants to stack bodies. Because when you get right down to it, at the extreme end of the right, that's all they actually believe in, is killing people, right? Like, right. That is the furthest right ideology is all about groups of people need to be eliminated, you know? Right. And whereas the kind of willingness to kill people in radical left-wing ideology often comes alongside another specific sort of goal, or as a byproduct. Like, you look at most of the people killed under communist regimes. It wasn't people being shot in the street. It was like starvation because of terrible economic and agricultural policy. So I definitely – we're living – every kind of extremism is more common now than it was 5 years ago. But I don't think the jump of people talking about stacking bodies on the left, it's happened, but it has not been nearly to the same kind of extent as I've seen on the right.
Joel, Guy, any questions for Robert? Anything to just add from your own perspectives?
No, I'm black, so I had to tune out. I can no longer engage with the sad white boys being like, I didn't mean to shoot people. What?
Well, yeah, I mean, fuck him, right? But like,
fuck him, and like, and to a much more aggressive extent, fuck anybody who A, buys into this shit, or B, is like just gleefully elated at this shit. Like, I just don't have the energy or time to invest in what has always been, right? I feel like there's a lot of people out here who are like, just miss me with the faux shock. He got off? How? What does it mean about a
crime? What do you mean being surprised?
I just, like, I can no longer engage in actively watching white supremacy, and like, grateful to people like Robert out there who are like, fuck no, not on my watch. Like, I'm gonna call it out and I'm gonna make sure that it's in people's faces and that you can't avoid it, because there are a lot of people who just want to pretend it doesn't exist. But I am fully aware, and for my mental health, I've had to just take a large step back from that, and like, really just my new goals for probably the next 3 years is like, let me focus on what I can do. I can't solve a lot of big problems. I have ADD. My focus is everywhere. I can give it to people just outside of my circle trying to do really positive things with their life and their time. Like, small self-promotion. We've got a program. Anna started it. Lovely producer of this podcast. It's called Next Up. It is one of those beautiful things ever to happen in my life. Like, we have kids trying to preserve their native languages. And we have this young woman who so eloquently speaks about her, the assaults that have happened to her, and how she's using all of the terrible shit she's been through to be a victim's advocate in her own life. We have people trying to rediscover lost history. Like, that's where I want to focus my energy. And I think for a lot of us that are like, I'm firmly on the left, I would like to see a lot of radical politics happen. I'm hopefully, you know, trying to support and engage with the people trying to make that happen. But I just want to work and operate my own little circles and try to make life better for those people as best I can.
Yeah, and I think that makes total sense. And I think part of what you're getting at, if I'm not mistaken, is the idea that, like, when it comes to, like, paying attention to the right, people like Rittenhouse and also just, like, kind of the thought leaders and stuff, it's not about, like, fuck doing that to dunk on them or to argue with them or to make a case as to why they're illegitimate. Like, you shouldn't have to do that. Number one, the only case you need to make is for the things you know are necessary, for the things that you, like, believe in and want. And number two, the only reason to pay attention to them is the same reason you would pay attention if there were a rattlesnake 3 feet away from you.
Yeah.
You're paying attention to know where they are so that you can defend yourself and your community from them. You're not paying attention with them to, like, dunk on them.
Right. Or give them fuel for their fire. Like, I really think they just thrive. So I'm like, oh, let's do an interview with Kyle Rittenhouse. He says Black Lives Matter. What does that mean? It doesn't mean shit. It does not mean shit to me or anyone else. Like, get out of here. Nobody cares. Please go away, little boy. Like, you got so lucky. I think what irks me most about Kyle Rittenhouse is, like, you were so blessed and lucky. Like, you murdered people. And now the government is like, no, go ahead, dude. Go around with your life. It's fine. Go live that life somewhere far away from us. Like, it's just exhausting.
And it's the It's so frustrating because I have to believe, just from a point of moral consistency, that any 17-year-old in his position should get another chance to be a human being and have a life, because he's a child.
He's an abolitionist. I don't even like want him to rot. And people are like, throw him in the basement of the cell. Like, no, what does that do for anybody? But I do want you to be held accountable.
Yeah, sure. I don't give a shit if he says, like, yeah, I support Black Lives Matter. If 20 years from now he says, you know what, I regret everything, I made terrible mistakes, I was a brainwash, and I'll be like, okay, good. Like, you, I'm glad you've proved that people can change. I don't care. I can't imagine. Number one, I don't think any of us should care what he doesn't have any insight into anything. Other than how to be rich in the criminal justice system. Like, to be honest, like, he's as useless for information on the criminal justice system as, like, fucking OJ was in 95. Like, yeah, you're a guy who had unlimited money for lawyers, and so you got off.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's how it works.
From the Daily Zeitgeist perspective, we're not right-wing watch. It's not, like, as much as possible, I try to avoid, like, seeking out right-wing, you know, perspectives, right? Like, what they're doing on the right. I'm mainly concerned with the way that I'm seeing that perspective infiltrate the mainstream media. So, like, I feel like we're more mainstream media watch, and it's becoming more and more common. Like, the window is moving in that direction in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There's also a New Yorker article that a lot of people are pointing to being like, this is a great, like, profile. It's called Kyle Rittenhouse, American Vigilante. Tries to, like, be very even-handed, and, like, the reporter, like, follows his family around, and it's a very sympathetic portrait of he and his family. That article also quotes him and takes him at his word that he's supportive of Black Lives Matter, or that his family is, and that he didn't know what he was doing when he was throwing up white power hand signals in a picture with Proud Boys. And it's just tacit sort of steady state white supremacy of the mainstream that I think is
kind
of worth watching.
Yeah, and it's so fucking bleak that I think one of the overwhelming lessons of the last 4 or 5 years is that the concept of journalism has overwhelmingly failed. It is a failure of an institution, a failure of an industry, a failure of a discipline on, like, a profound and almost incomprehensible scale. It didn't start 5 years ago. You know, you can go back to the 70s, the 80s, read about stuff like the CIA, you know, basically dictating press releases to the New York Times about regime change in Guatemala and Chile. But it's this idea that, like, a lot of it's a beautiful idea that there would be a fifth estate that has as powerful as another branch of the government, but exists purely to check its power and is completely independent. But that's nothing but, like, a load of horseshit. And profiles like that make that point, because as long as you can be sympathetic to a journalist who believes more than anything that they should not be biased, that, like, the most important thing in the world is that nobody call them biased. That is always going to be the result of that shit. It's why we get all of these, like, fawning pro-Nazi articles. It's why we humanize people like Trump. It's why we tried to humanize. It's why Hitler got humanized by the fucking New York Times and everybody else when he was rising to power. It's because these people desperately believe there have to be two sides to every person. And because they're dumb and they're hacks, and that a New Yorker writer is a dumb hack, they mistake being fair and empathetic. And you can and should be empathetic about the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, because it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for the people he killed. It's a tragedy for the community. And it's a tragedy for him as an individual, because, like, he has destroyed any chance of ever having a life or being a real person. And it's a tragedy that there's a lot to say about the United States, about the way boys grow up here, about gun culture, about just the general worship of violence in our society, about right-wing media, about social media in general. And yes, about like the left-wing media and protest. There's a lot in this story that a good journalist, and some of that will involve being empathetic. You can't just approach Kyle Rittenhouse as if he's the devil, because he's not. He's a kid who made a decision that he thought was justifiable. And a mix, I think in his head, it was a mix of wanting to be a hero and wanting to be a man and being a man by killing people. And that's a that's a compelling emotional story. But if you're just a hack and a fraud, the only way to make something compelling is to pretend there's as much good in someone's actions as there was bad. Like, that's what even-handed means to hacks. Mm-hmm. And so you don't get, I don't know, you don't get a lot of good journalism these days.
Well, and to your point, Robert, like, that same ideology of, like, we have to be even-handed and fair is keeping a lot of people who have an otherism within their livelihood, whether that's race, whether it's gender identity, whether it's, you know, sexuality, whatever the case may be, from being in these rooms. And we saw a lot of that with Nicole Hannah-Jones, of just, like, she is so on top of her game, and it's still constantly like, oh, well, you can't, you're prejudiced because you're Black. How could you ever report about slavery?
Well, if you have a Black journalist report on a Black Lives Matter protest or on police violence against the Black community, that's a conflict of interest. That's bias. Yes. So let's just have another white dude do it. Which,
oh my gosh, it's so upsetting to have so many friends who have actually studied journalism who are trying to do it ethically be kept out of these rooms or kept at a pay rate where they cannot live a full life. And just constantly be told either you're not good enough, you haven't done enough studies, and or your position in life instantly makes you prejudiced and unable to evenly report on almost anything that has to do with your livelihood. It is just, it's an insane place to sort of stand in the middle and be like, we could really use some great journalism now. And the best that we have is typically people who are unverified. We're just hoping that these folks on the ground have enough knowledge, have actually done the research, have enough training to do it, because we can no longer trust the institutions that have been around.
The most influential piece of journalism last year, and to their mild credit, the Pulitzers recognize this, was the young woman who took a video of George Floyd getting murdered. Like, that was more impactful than every article the New York Times wrote that year put together. And it was impactful. It wasn't less good journalism because she looked at what was happening and was like, well, this is wrong.
All right. I figured this would happen. I like bring you on and then ask you an hour's worth of questions and then just like, all right, well, that was an act of the podcast. But thank you for joining us. I'm sure we'll, you know, continue this conversation. I'm sure you'll be continuing it on your podcasts, Behind the Bastards, and it could happen here.
That's very true, Jack.
All right, Robert, thank you so much for joining us. We will be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
we can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
And we're back, and let's talk about McDonald's ice cream machine.
Finally.
Yeah, yes. Could we?
The real hard-hitting news, what we needed to get you this whole time.
Not a lot to see here, just capitalism working extremely well. So for anyone who missed our first update on McDonald's ice cream machines, they are notoriously out of order. Like, you know, there are websites... There are apps even that are used to track whether a McDonald's ice cream machine is in order or not, because the percentages that get thrown around are like between 10 and 25% of the time they're out of order. But in my experience, it's been
100.
Yeah, it's like you cannot get usually ice cream at they're McDonald's, out of order.
It's a myth. Yeah.
how often are you guys getting your ice cream from McDonald's?
But if you ever had McFlurry, you would understand, okay? It's not the crust oriented. It's all so good, guy. It's
wait,
amazing.
Do other places serve ice cream? Is that?
Yeah, man, we got ice cream shops down here.
Sorry, I'm American over here.
That's McDonald's for us, okay?
that's it. In what I have to imagine, if anybody could please leak the pitch doc for the sale of these machines, like the signing of the deal, I have to imagine it rivals the Pepsi logo redesign, like for just like bullshit capitalism, like buzzwords. But they signed a contract to buy all their ice cream machines from one company called Taylor. Taylor outfitted those ice cream machines with a proprietary computerized interface. So the machines that they bought from this company like promptly didn't work for shit. McDonald's had to start spending money every time one broke down to pay said company to fix them since they had this proprietary computerized interface that like nobody else knew how to operate. The company was making 25% of their revenue off of just repairing McDonald's ice cream machines. Like from
shout out
not
to
just
Tyler.
Their yeah, not just their McDonald's revenue, like all their revenue across the whole company. Like a quarter was just repairing their own.
I just want to pause the story
machines.
Here because I feel like this is going to be anti-Taylor. But if you manage to sell a contract for your soft serve machines to McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
right?
Hats off.
Right.
Furthermore, mm-hmm. if you know that those are faulty machines, you're the only person who can fix right. them.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. You got McDonald's. I'm sorry. You had a good run.
Has Lacey Mosley done this scam story yet? I'm literally about to tweet it at her because this is the greatest scam in history. And I think if McDonald's PR was intelligent, they'll be like, listen, we really want to pay our employees more. We would. But our ice cream machine is already, that's Taylor's fault. Okay. If Taylor fixes our ice cream machine permanently, everyone gets $2 raise an hour. And then more people go back to McDonald's. I feel I'm really seeing the dominoes here.
So the problem with that is that the people who signed the deal with Taylor in the first place, which was a stupid fucking deal, obviously, like they still work for McDonald's, presumably.
That's a matter of perspective.
Right. It's a bad deal for McDonald's. they still work for McDonald's, and therefore they don't want to admit it was a bad deal. So they just double down on this relationship. A company named Kitch, K-Y-T-C-H.
Great just, company name.
Yes.
The story's just got it all.
Yes. Kitch came through and started making essentially a Game Genie. I don't know if you guys like are old-timey gamers, but like this was a thing you could plug into Sega and Nintendo, and it would just like make it so you could like you had unlimited lives and like the rules basically didn't apply to you. Like they made a Game Genie
in my childhood for
the McDonald's ice cream machines that basically allowed people who worked at McDonald's to work the ice cream machines without calling Taylor to come through and like do the thing.
Okay, again, my inclination is to side with Taylor here. Not unlike I would side with Nintendo or Sega. If you're only cheating yourself. If you get infinity lives, you're not learning any lessons when you're gaming.
Right.
And if you want to pull an ice cream, you shouldn't be able to do that easy. If you're operating these machines, it sounds like it should be a challenge.
I have a theory that Taylor is somehow involved with Kitch. And because I understand that capitalism is all about tricking people into giving you more money, and frequently people will create shell companies to be like, no, look, this one right here, it's so good. Like, we've got you covered from all sides. You can't escape our business prowess.
Well, they were involved with them in the sense that they took Kitch's invention, like basically reverse engineered it, and then like put Kitch out of order by getting McDonald's to send a company-wide like memo being like, never use the Kitch thing ever, which again, so McDonald's is on Taylor's side because they, you know, signed the deal together that was a bad deal and not efficient. And, you know, the people who are suffering here, unfortunately, are not the people who signed that deal in the first place. It's the employees who are having to work this broken fucking ice cream machine that doesn't work and had to like, that were reduced to like going on the black market to find a Game Genie for their ice cream machine. Like that's how much it ruined their job.
I smell an opportunity for Jack O'Brien, Soft Serve King.
Yes.
You get a small documentary crew, you travel across America and you help out these employees by showing them good soft serve technique.
Yes. So the documents, I get the feeling it has little to do with their not having good technique, which I am a little bit like when I get a McDonald's soft serve, I'm like, call that a fucking cone? Are we serious?
You don't like the little baby, like 4-inch tiny little cones?
No, it's fine, Joa. It's fine. It's just, it could be better when it's working. But so basically, the documents have revealed Taylor was sending emails being like, we got to make one as good as Kitch. Like, Kitch is eating our lunch and just like basically openly copying their thing while trying to put them out of business. It's like anti-competitive. And this Wired article just makes a good point that this is essentially, actually, it's a quote from one of the Kitch employees, I think Kitch founders, who said, you might compare this to the F-35. It's like, does Lockheed really want to finish this airplane? Or do they want another $100 million contract to fix some component on the old one? It's like, that is the truth about how money is mostly spent in the economy, in the American economy. Is it's like all these, you know, backdoor deals and like people covering their own ass for making a stupid decision that then affects people who, you know, had nothing to do with the decision and have to, like, you know, work with this on a daily basis.
Is there a parallel to Theranos where it's like, we got this great thing and you tell everyone and you sell it to them and then people go, oh, it's not quite working. And you're like, you're right. But what we need is a little bit more seed money and then we're going to get this thing working so good, you're not going to freaking believe it. And then you just see how long you can stretch the life for.
Right.
You know when you're a kid and you assume that adults are across everything?
Yeah.
This Turns is just out. That. It's like you assume, you know, everyone knows how everything works, but everyone's an idiot.
Yeah. Except it's all just, yeah, it's...
I want to help McDonald's out here, not because of a deep affinity of love for McDonald's or anything, but just because, like, what if you guys... And hear me out, just stop selling ice cream. You're like, you know, once the machine's broken, we're just not going to use it anymore, and we're not going to buy anymore, and it's going to be fine. What percentage of ice cream sales is McDonald's like really? Well, because it's like a dollar for a cone. I just really feel like they can go without. And then once that Taylor contract expires, they can just be like, okay, now we're going to pivot. And I don't know, like, sign a deal with Ben & Jerry's, okay? It's really going to just upgrade. You can sell it for more money. More people are going to come through. There's got to be a solution here that doesn't involve you. I just don't like when people get screwed with. It really hurts my feelings. I feel like, why are we doing this? Why? More than that, I hate wasting money. I don't understand how, like... So much money has been wasted. So many valuable man hours. What are we doing? Is this, I don't understand anything.
I feel like as soon as that Taylor contract expires, there'll be a new sales rep from a hot new company called Tyler who shows up with a fake mustache and says, I understand you had trouble with some ice cream machines.
I just spent an hour and a half food shopping at my local Kroger late last night, and... it's because they completely reshuffled where everything is in the Kroger.
Yep, that's a good tactic.
And I got to the, you know, checkout. And as I got to the checkout, a armed security guard came in looking for a bottle of liquor. And asked the person who was checking me out, like, where it was. And he was like, used to be in like six, but I honestly like don't know where the fuck anything is anymore. And then we just had a nice little like 5 minute complaint about like how we don't understand why they do it. And he was like, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, somebody who gets paid way more than me decided to do this and doesn't have to deal with this shit at all.
Well, the thing is to make it more difficult for you to shop. Like, it's a very specific tactic, because if you know where everything is, you can go in and grab what you want and get out. But if you don't know where everything is, you have to peruse the aisles, and suddenly, you know, you're picking up, I don't know, the new topped Ben & Jerry's with the caramel in it. Oh, so fucking good. Or, you know, whatever. Like, because it used to be like all of your, like, you go to any grocery store ever, you go to the left, and that's where your vegetables and fruits are. You come through the door, all your veggies and fruits are here. Back wall, it's all of your dairy products. Right and down the sides, you've got anything else that needs to be refrigerated but isn't directly dairy related. And then, you know, your aisles are chopped up however those are chopped up. Typically, you're working your way into more processed sugar things. But then they switch it up. So you gotta really get in there and look for what you want and hopefully buy more things, as is the American way.
And in New Zealand, it's totally different. They're all open air, and they're not shelves. Everyone just wears Hessian sacks, and they walk around and they wave their wares, and they say, milk for sale, milk for sale.
Yeah.
Here goes guy again bragging about his like beautiful euphoric land that he comes from. God, we have to get out of here, Chad.
Man, I'd feel a lot less stupid if I hadn't gone in just looking for SOS pan scrubbing pads and come out with like $200 worth of groceries. I think they fucking got me, Joel.
That's
I think
how it you're works. Right. That's how it works.
There's nothing worse than doing that and you're carrying around the little basket and you're like, this will cover everything.
That's right.
Then you're playing Tetris with your groceries.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, man. Well, Guy, Joel as well, it's been such a pleasure having both of you. Guy, where can people find you and follow you?
You can find me in Auckland at my house. And that's been true for a long time. But if that is not enough for you, you can find me online, which is Twitter and Instagram at guy_mont. And I recently released I self-released on Bandcamp a stand-up show, my hour-long stand-up show from earlier this year when it was legal to do stand-up comedy in this country. It's called Guy Montgomery by Name, Guy Montgomery by Nature, and it's $5 on Bandcamp, which I'm pretty sure is like a dime for you guys. So
with inflation.
Yeah. It's great value.
Yeah. Awesome. Go buy that. I will be going to buy that right after we end this meeting. And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yeah, there was a tweet I saw the other day that I was just like, man, the word economy on this is out of sight. It's by a Twitter user at Arson Doer. So pretty incriminating handle. But the tweet was, if smoking's so bad, why does it cure salmon?
I mean, beautiful.
it is
so so perfect and such a perfect dad joke, and in line with the sensibility of this show that it has been used before, but we will allow it.
No, it cannot be. This is why I knew I was coming on the show a week ago, and I was like, I'm going to put that to the side. And there then some dirty dog got in there.
The trade.
I think it was Miles, so you can blame him.
It was.
Joelle, where can people find you? What is the tweet you've been enjoying?
Yes, y'all know me. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique. It's JoelleMoniqueUE. Yes. Michelle C. Clark on Twitter tweeted something that's really beautiful. I believe in signs from the universe, little gifts here and there. If you're looking for them, I'm trying to make a lot of small but impactful changes, as my therapist likes to call them. It's not easy, but Michelle C. Clark said staying committed to healthy daily habits is like writing a series of love letters to your future self, and it really resonated with me. And if you're also trying to make little small and significant changes for a better life, hopefully it resonates with you too.
That's nice. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. A couple tweets I've been enjoying. Jamie Loftus at Jamie Loftus Help tweeted, "What is a holiday but a family member calling you Mrs. Fucking Hollywood when you refuse to eat spaghetti from a Ziploc bag?" And then Tom Gar just gave us a little piece of nonfiction that has stuck with me since I read it earlier this morning. He said, "A tragic airplane moment. We've been sitting on the tarmac waiting to take off for 2 hours. No. The guy in front of us fell asleep immediately upon boarding. He just woke up and started getting ready to get off the plane.
No!
He thought we'd landed." My wife broke the news to him.
Poor baby.
I know. I've
been that guy in a slightly, I would say, even more disorienting situation, which is I was awake when the plane took off and fell asleep once we were in the sky, and then we got to where we were meant to land, but it was too windy to land, and so the plane circled back and landed at the original airport.
Oh my god.
When I woke up and was like, all right, holiday time.
Fuck, man. All right, well, you can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. And I am going to recommend you go check out Earl Sweatshirt's new song, 2010, which is just a dope song. Lyrically, he seems to just continue to get better and better. And I really like the beat. Go check that out. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this Monday morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.